I'll get that later. So here we are again with the title of this message, Contending for the Faith, the Gospels and the Epistles. We started with the Apostles and the Epistles, didn't get very far in the Epistles. So today we're talking about the Gospels and the Epistles. And there's one thing that I wanted to share just kind of in fun with our 28th year anniversary this day. I shared with Melanie that there's a little bit of a surprise in the presentation that she will come upon. She really has no clue what it is or when it will happen, but I think she will understand once it does. But I wanted to clue her in just a little bit so it didn't totally throw her off, and me dodging daggers by her eyes when it did happen, and also to kind of prep you as well. So with that being said, I'm going to turn it over.
I don't want to do this now.
To you.
Thanks.
To enjoy
Thanks.
Yourself.
I'm going to go sit down. I need that the clicker. Okay. I am in charge of the clicker. All right, good morning, everyone. I think this will be the last one for a while. I don't know about you, but, you know, I'm just kind of tired of history. I don't know about you, but, you know, I've had enough. So we will start off. Did anybody keep your notes from last time? Of course she did. Of course you did. Yes. Okay, well, if you have those, you can work both sheets if you want to. You know, it's kind of like bingo. You can work both sheets. Bingo, yes. B3. All right, let's start back with, this is just a tad bit of a review, all right, just so that you know if you're working from your old sheet. Arliss, in AD 57, Paul wrote his letter to the Romans, and I got to stick with my notes rather than the pictures, even though I like the pictures. They're really great. By the time Paul is writing to the Romans, the churches have already been established there. So he did not himself establish the churches in Rome. He is going, he is writing this letter. He's had associations with them. Peter is already there in Rome, and so he has connections with Peter. So that's where that stands. The converts were probably converts from the day of Pentecost, which would have been 25 years prior to this. Okay? And let me see. I'm going to keep moving along. The letter to the Romans was Paul's longest and most theological letter. It carried a lot of influence. What? Fast forward. There we go. I'm trying to find my place. In the middle century of the first century, believers in Rome were treated cruelly by the populace, and many were tortured and put to death by the Roman Emperor Nero by this AD 57. Okay, I'm going to move on from there. You got the notes there. Oop, I went too many. Okay, AD 58. No, I'm right where I'm going to need to be. I got to back up. Okay, what does this mean? I don't get it. What don't I get? It's a train. Advance it. I don't, what am I doing? You messed it up. Okay, good, because I'm lost. Okay. Just wait. Okay, we'll wait. We'll wait for the entertainment. He's shaking his head back there. Yeah. Okay, there's the train. The train has something to do with... Yeah, well, that's what I was saying. I don't know. I'm lost.
What happened every Sunday afternoon when we were here?
Oh, the train went through. Oh, so that was supposed to... Okay, well, here's the story. When we first met, we met at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Okay, we didn't meet Sunday mornings. We met at 2 o'clock on Sunday morning. Sunday afternoons. And the train would go through. Now, the thing he didn't share with you is that my children were up at this building, and there was one Sunday where I had to go home for something, and I heard the train coming. And I thought, the train is coming. And it's blowing its whistle a lot more than what it should be. Why is the train doing that? And I get up to the church, and here my children are standing out on the tracks doing this number. They were on the tracks doing this number. Yes.
On the tracks.
On the tracks. On the tracks. The train was a ways away, but they were, get back over here. What do you think you're, you know. A mother's tirade, you know. You can understand mothers, right? Wouldn't you be just having a fit? Yeah, I was. Terrible fit. Where were you? What were you doing? You know, cast the blame. I was at home, so, yeah. They aren't. So, actually, it would have been just Rodney and Becky, because the other two weren't around yet. Yeah, we won't go there. Okay, so back to the message. Okay, AD 58, Paul is arrested in Jerusalem. And the story behind this, I would love for you to go read this. It's in Acts 21, 38. It's a really interesting story. He ends up coming to Jerusalem. He's in the midst of completing a ritual, a Jewish customary ritual, and other Jews from Asia recognize him, and they think he's brought Gentiles into the temple, and so they're all stirred up. So the whole story goes that Paul ends up becoming arrested by the commander in Jerusalem, because eventually it becomes a mob. And what happens is that Paul's nephew hears of a plot that the Jewish leaders are going to try and kill Paul. And he hears of the plot. Paul sends his nephew to the commander, you know, tell him what you know. And so then they move Paul from Jerusalem to Caesarea. And that's where this, the picture that you have here is actually, it's not of Felix. Felix was the governor when Paul first went there. But Felix kept him in prison because it made the Jewish people happy. So actually, Paul was in prison for 2 years while he was in Caesarea. But the picture that you have here is actually Felix is removed as the governor, and then we have Festus comes in, and Festus is on your left, and then there's King Agrippa, and then his wife Bernice is actually who Paul is speaking to. And he is so persuasive in his speech that they become disturbed about, they get scared about the things that he's sharing because of the things that he has said. And so then they say, no, you need to go away from us because you make us uncomfortable. Click. You can tell I'm not a man. I don't know how to work this. Okay, go over to my next page here. All right, AD 58 to 63. Now, you have to realize when I'm giving you these dates, it's all a guess in when exactly, but they kind of have set them in a row as to when they were written. This is the book of Luke. Here is a modern-day picture. I didn't give you the iconic picture. I like the iconic one, too. That's kind of cool, too. But this is a picture here of Luke. Luke writes his letter to Theophilus, who actually Theophilus means one who loves God, which is an interesting thought. Anyway, Luke is a Gentile convert from Antioch. He had no children and he had no wife. He is the only non-Jewish author in the New Testament. And yet a quarter of his writings take up the New Testament. So that's an interesting little piece of trivia for you. Tradition states that that Luke was a member of the 70. Remember, we had the 3, Peter, John, James, then we have the 12, and then we have the 70. And it is, tradition says that Luke was one of the 70. Titus, the letter that was written to Titus is actually Luke's brother. Didn't know if you knew that or not. It gets to be kind of a family affair here as we go, as you'll see. All right? So, from Paul's letter, we learned that Luke is a dear friend and a co-worker. Luke is listed after the Jewish people. When Paul is addressing people in his letter, he starts first with his Jewish brethren, and then he moves to the Gentile converts. And remember, in Greek language, order is important. So people who are more important come first in how they list names. And Paul was always trying to give preference to his Jewish brothers. He was always trying to win them as best as he could. So that's just something to understand when you read through Paul's letters. Right? So Luke is, you can tell by Luke's writing that he's well-educated. He's a skilled writer. He's a careful theologian and historian. If you go to Luke, why don't you do that with me? Go to Luke, because then you'll be able to see this. And I'll have to get my glasses here a minute. In Luke 1:3, it says, having carefully, this is Luke speaking, having carefully investigated everything from the beginning, I also have decided to write a careful account to you, most honorable Theophilus, so that you can be certain of the truth of everything that you were taught. So he's very, very careful. It's they suspect that he spent, while Paul was in prison in Caesarea, is when he spent his time investigating and sorting out to be able to write this account. At the time of Luke's writing, the Gentile world would have had just some oral accounts of Jesus's life, and it would have been through eyewitnesses, and that was all that they had. They might have had copies of Deuteronomy from the Septuagint. Anybody remember what the Septuagint is? Raise your hand. Anybody? 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 Helen. It's the first five books, but in what language? The Greek language. It's the whole Old Testament, but it's in the Greek language. Yes, so they would have had some copies of that. But so this was important. This was a milestone for the early church to have Luke write this document for them. The thing that's unique about Luke's gospel is that he starts from Adam in his descendants, where the rest of them start from Abraham. He was including the whole of mankind, and that was important to the Gentiles because back to Abraham means nothing to them. All right, here's an interesting little thing. This is, the picture on the right is Luke painting, and Christian tradition says that Luke was our first iconic painter, believe it or not. And this picture on your left, let me see if I can pronounce it right, the Hodigitria, it's Latin, is the name of this print. And actually, it began as a full-length print. So it was from her head to her feet. And what it is, let me just read this for you. It was, it's Latin for... Our Lady the Way. And what she's doing, what Luke is portraying, is you see her hand goes like this. What she's doing is she's showing you salvation. She's showing you Jesus, is what this was to portray. And then on the back side of the original print was a full-length crucifixion scene. So it was quite a deal. This actual print ended up in Constantinople, and now it is lost. The original is lost, but there's many, many copies. This one here, Mary is actually pretty. The original, close to the original that I've seen, she's not very, you know, it's just your tip. Well, let me say this. Iconic paintings are not realistic for the most part. So you have to, you know, their foreheads are big and their chins are big and, you know, they're just not realistic from an artist's perspective, okay? So that's just a little bit of trivia for you that Luke was a painter, and he painted about 600 iconic paintings that they have in record. Now, he died, Luke died at 84 years old, and he died in Greece, but when the church in Constantinople was established, and that was after Constantine, Constantine set up his capital in Constantinople, which is now... Istanbul, okay? Sorry, some of you just aren't with the... Anyway, okay, so they moved. This is the thing. They got into the thing of where they took the saints, they took their relics, so they took their bones, and they transferred them to Constantinople. But in the 1980s, a museum in Greece is saying, come on, we want the bones back. We want the bones back. And all they were able to find of Luke's relics was his skull. So you can actually go to Greece and you can see Luke's skull. Isn't that interesting? Exciting. All right. Luke also wrote the Acts of the Apostles. Actually, Luke and the Acts of the Apostles were actually combined into one document, but they broke them up into two. And we've already talked about the Acts of Apostles before. It's actually just a historical account of the first 33 years of the church. All right? And so it fulfills the need for the Gentiles and the church to have a full account of the beginnings of the church. And it was probably written about AD 63. All right? This is an interesting fact. Luke did a tremendous job with this. He mentions 32 countries, 54 cities, 9 Mediterranean islands, 95 different persons by name, and a variety of governmental officials and administrators by their precise titles. Now, did you all write that down? Because that's on the test. Just saying, it's on the test. Okay. Here we have the Gospel of Matthew. Gospel of Matthew was written to the Jewish believers. The Jewish background of this gospel is evident in many ways. It includes its reliance on Old Testament revelation, promises, and prophecies that prove that Jesus is the Messiah. That was his whole purpose, to prove that Jesus was the Messiah. It traces Jesus' lineage back to the start of Abraham. It repeats the declaration that Jesus is the son of David. Why did he do that? Why would he do that? Son of David. Why would he do that? It was to the Jewish people because the Messiah was to come through the line of David. Exactly. Okay. He uses Jewish terminology in the form of the kingdom of heaven. Other gospels use the kingdom of God. Why did he use the kingdom of heaven? Anybody remember? Yes, Ellie. Yes. Yeah, yeah. What she's saying is that the Jewish people would not say the name of God. They just wouldn't say it. And they, and we talked about this before, they just set up some letters to represent that. And so Matthew is very sensitive to them. So instead of saying the kingdom of God, he says the kingdom of heaven. So when you read that the next time, you'll understand why he used those terms. Okay? It refers, like I said, to the Jewish custom without any explanation, unlike the other Gospels. However, the Gospel is not exclusively Jewish. He didn't just make it for them. It was intended for the whole church, and they took these Gospel accounts and they passed them throughout the other churches that were in Asia Minor at the time. Okay? AD 62. Here is a map. I wish it was bigger. You might have to, if you're really into maps, you might have to turn to the map in the back of your Bible. That's what they're for, is so that you can see. We're going to talk about the church at Colossae. It would be the Colossian church, the letter to the Colossians. This is Turkey that you see here. The Aegean Sea is over here. Let's see. Hierapolis is there. The cities that are starred are the churches in the book of Revelation. Okay, so you see Pergamum is up here. It's missing the P. Thyatira, Smyrna, Sardis, Philadelphia, and Ephesus is over here. But Colossae is right down here. Yeah, and Colossae does not exist today. It's just ruins, and you can go visit it if you would like. All right. So let's see. The church in Colossae appears to have been founded as a result of Paul's three missionary journeys, but he did not actually ever go to Colossae. He was never ever there. And you can, that was while he was at Ephesus. He was in Ephesus for 3 years, and while he was there, there was great emphasis and outreach done while he was there. And if you look at Acts 19:10, it talks about how all the Jews and the Greeks who lived in the province, and that was Pergama, is the province. You can see the word over here, but that's that whole province there, had heard about the word of the Lord. You can pick that up in Acts 19:10. So although Paul never went to Colossae as a person, he maintained contact with the church through Epaphras, and you'll see that in if you read the book of Colossians. And he was a convert of Paul's and an associate. And on the occasion that this letter was written, Epaphras goes to Paul. Paul is writing this letter from Rome. He's in prison, and Epaphras goes and he tells him about the troubles that they're having in Colossae. And from that, then Paul goes ahead and he writes this letter to the Colossian people. Now, Paul has his co-worker, Tychicus. He goes and he delivers this letter in person because, as we said before, Paul is in prison. And it deals with a heresy that's being preached in the Colossian church. And it doesn't say in Colossians exactly what is being preached. Paul assumes that they all know what he's talking about. So we have a little bit of unknowing as what's going on, but they figure that it's a mixture of Christian teaching, extra-biblical, traditional Jewish tradition, and some pagan philosophy all mixed together in a soup, and they're all partaking of it, okay? AD 62, Paul's letter to Philemon was written. Now, the letter to the Colossians and the letter to Philemon were written at the same time because Philemon was a member of the Colossian church. All right, so they were written about the same time. And anybody want to tell me what the letter is about? It's a personal letter. Anybody? Anybody? Anyone? Okay, I'll tell you then. All right, Philemon was a member, and what had happened is Philemon's slave, Onesimus, has run away and ended up in Rome, and he became friends with Paul, and Paul witnessed to him, and then he became a convert. So he's a believer now, and Paul is writing this letter to Philemon to tell him that, you know, go easy on this guy, take him back, embrace him. He's a fellow believer, and he is a companion of mine. And by Roman law, Philemon could have had this servant killed because of his running away. So that's what the letter of Philemon is about. Interesting letter. It's not very long. You can all read it. It's great, great, great. Okay? Paul's letter to the Ephesians was written. I want to tell you a little bit about Ephesus. Ephesus is the city. The city of Ephesus was the largest and most significant, sophisticated city in Asia Minor. It was elaborately designed, and it was famous for its many temples and its schools of philosophy and learning. It had gymnasiums. It had they performed theatrical performances, and they had stadium games. It was just the place to be. It was also known for notable citizens lived here in Ephesus. It was just a beautiful place to live. The proconsul of Rome actually had his residence here in Ephesus. The harbor, you come into Ephesus, and that's what made it so important, was that it was a great big harbor, and it was considered to be an achievement in human engineering at the time. It was tremendous. And because it had all these ships that were coming in and out, bringing goods from different areas, it was considered the gateway to Asia. And it was the fourth biggest city in the Roman Empire. Anybody want to guess what the first one was? Rome. Yep, Rome. The second was Alexandria, which would have been in Egypt. Now you have to remember, the Roman Empire is huge. And the third was Antioch of Syria. And then the fourth is Ephesus. It was prosperous, it was sophisticated, considered the crowning jewel of the Roman Empire. It was also referred to as the light of Asia because it was a city that was known for its tolerance and a place of enlightenment and accepted new ideas. So remember that, new ideas, place of enlightenment. Ephesus was also had a large Egyptian population. Back in the day, Mark Antony and Cleopatra had their winter home there. So there you go. Cleopatra exiled her sister to Ephesus. Cleopatra and her brother and her sister were vying for the throne in Alexandria, and of course she won. The brother she had murdered and the sister she, actually Julius Caesar, Cleopatra's boyfriend, sent the sister here to Ephesus, and she stayed in the temple. And then when Mark Antony started seeing Cleopatra, then he had her executed on the temple, so that did her no good at all. All right, here is a picture. Like I said, I'm giving you some information on Ephesus. Ephesus was housed the temple of Artemis. Artemis is the Greek name for this goddess. As you can see here, this here is all breasts, and I don't know about you, but that just isn't attractive to me at all. Just saying. It's just the way it is. Artemis, the Roman name for her is Diana, and what she was the goddess of hunting and of forests and woods, and a better picture of her. She was a young, she was depicted as a young woman, and she had, you know, the Greek dress, but her dress only went to her knees, and she requested that of her father, who was Zeus, who was the top god, so that she could run through the woods. She wanted a skirt that was shorter, so there she got it. And she's also depicted with a bow of a thing of arrows. What do you call that? Quiver. There we go. Quiver of arrows and then a bow because she hunted, all right? So she was the girl that they all worshipped in Ephesus. Here is a modern-day picture of Curtis Street walking down through Ephesus. I don't know if you can even imagine what this place would have looked like. I'm going to go there someday, just saying. If you see the pillars here, well, on the other side of the pillars were shops. There were shops that ran all the way along this street. This street ran from the harbor down to the face of the building you see there is the library, and that was the most important building in the city of Ephesus. I got to go back here a minute, make sure I've got everything. Okay. In AD 52, Paul and husband and wife ministry team, Aquila and Priscilla, disembarked together. The three of them disembarked together in the port of Ephesus to begin their ministry. Paul had met Priscilla and Aquila in Corinth, because Priscilla and Aquila had been, the Jews had been expelled out of Rome by Claudius. And so they had to go somewhere else to live. So now they are working together as a team. They're doing tent making there. And I don't know if you find it interesting, but I do, that Priscilla is kind of a strawberry blonde. I just find that really interesting that they depict her that way. But anyway, Paul is the bald guy on the far left, which is the way they always picture him. All the iconic pictures are of him. He has no hair, has no bangs. All right? So anyway, Paul takes a, what? Yeah, okay. Hooray for the bald. Okay, so they get to Ephesus, and just before they get to, before they leave for Ephesus, Paul takes a vow. And he's got to complete this vow in 30 days. So when they get to Ephesus, they set up camp, they set up their work, and then Paul, he heads off to Jerusalem, and he leaves Priscilla and Aquila there to start the ministry. After Paul returns, he comes back to Ephesus, and he sees that these Jewish and Gentile minds are open to what he has to say. Remember, City of Enlightenment? Remember me saying that? And they're open to new ideas. So he stays there for 3 years. He's there for 3 years. And it is said, tradition states, that the church in Ephesus grew to 60,000 people, which to me is amazing. I'm sure they were small home churches, that kind of thing, but it grew that much, and Paul had that much influence in the area. So back to the book of Ephesians. It was written 9 years after Paul was there. All right, so if you can jump 9 years into the future, it was 9 years after Paul had been there. And this is Ephesians is considered to be the mountain peak of biblical revelation, because Paul's other letters were all about doctrinal things. It was controversy, or it was pastoral concerns, or you need to do this, and you need to do this, and you need to do this. Well, this letter is not like that at all. This letter is an outflow of revelation that Paul has in his prayer for these people. And if you go through the book of Ephesians, you can see that, where it's just prayer after prayer after prayer, and he's just expounding on what he's been praying for them about. And it's just a totally different letter than all the other letters that Paul wrote. And Paul wrote this when he was a prisoner in Rome. All right, moving on, there we go. Paul's letter to the Philippians. All right. The Philippi was a city in Macedonia. So if you went back to the map, Macedonia is north of Greece. I don't know if that's helpful or not. It was on the Aegean Sea, and it was named after King Philip II, who was Alexander the Great's father. So it was an honorary city in Rome and a military post. The church in Philippi was founded by Paul and his team, Silas, Timothy, and Luke, and it was established on their second missionary journey in response to the God-given vision. Anybody remember what the vision was? Paul had a vision of a Macedonian who said, come over to Macedonia and help us. And so they do. They go to Macedonia. He tries to go into Bithynia and many other places, and the Spirit of God forbade them from going there. But then he has this vision. Paul has a very strong bond with these people. Their friendship is well developed. And of the churches that Paul established, the Philippian church was known for its financial help and contributions to Paul's work. They gave large amounts of money that Paul took back to Jerusalem for the Christians who were under fire there. Paul visited the church twice on his third missionary journey while he was with them. He mentions several different times that Epaphroditus is the one who brought Paul the generous gift that he received while he was in prison, because this letter was also written while he was in prison. Paul wrote to assure this congregation of the triumph of God's purpose in his imprisonment. I don't know if you remember that. He says, my imprisonment is for your good. It's a good thing. Don't be discouraged. He continued to encourage them that way. And to assure the church that the messenger that Epaphroditus had brought their gift to him, and that he was staying with him a little while so that he was not discouraged, and then he encouraged the church to press on and know the Lord in unity, humility, and fellowship, and in peace. All right. Remember we talked about the brother James, the brother of Jesus. In AD 62, he was executed in Jerusalem. And the story goes, I think they were all crazy. They didn't know what they were doing. The Sanhedrin and the Pharisees were very, very upset. The whole thing was the temple had been completed, and there was economic unrest in Jerusalem. The workers didn't have work to do, and there was all this turmoil. And then James was having all this influence with the religious leaders. They were believing in Jesus because of him. And so your main Sanhedrin, so your Sadducees and your leading Pharisees, they're having problems with the people embracing Jesus. So they ask James, this is the craziness, they ask James to speak to the people at Passover in the spring of 62 to encourage them not to follow Jesus. It doesn't make sense to me at all. And he gets up and he tells them that Jesus is the door, and he's the door to salvation, and many people believe, and so now they're upset. And what you see here is a picture of James. They have, the leaders have thrown him off the temple to the ground, so he's been thrown from a great height to the ground, and he survives it, and he gets up and he starts praying for them, and they are, and those on the ground, they start pelting him with stones, and he's not dying. Instead, he's praying for them. And the gentleman that you see with the club there, he's just a laundry man. And he doesn't like what he has to say, so he takes his club and he clubs him over the head with it. And then that's what does him in. So it's so graphic, so graphic. But that's the end of James, the brother of Jesus. He was the bishop in Jerusalem, and so now we have a new bishop. All right, moving on quickly. Boy, this takes a long time to get through this. Okay, AD 63, Peter's first letter is written from Rome. He does not actually write the letter. Silas writes the letter, and ask me about Silas another time. Silas is an interesting guy. He is also, by church tradition, considered to be one of the 70 as well. Peter, he speaks a Greek no so good, and so Silas writes for him. And Peter's letter is mostly about joyful hope for the believers, all right, and to endure their trials, all right. AD 65, Paul writes his letter to Timothy. This is a pastoral letter. It's a personal pastoral letter. What we know about Timothy is he was born in about AD 17. He started his ministry with Paul when he was about 35 years old. If you remember our Jewish study, men came into their ministry about 30 years old, somewhere around in there. Timothy was half Jewish and half Greek. His father was Greek, and he was a leading member in the church at Lystra. And that's, I don't think I'm going to give you much more about that. Paul's letter to Titus was written. They were written about the same time, Paul's letter to Titus and Paul's letter to Timothy. Titus, as we said before, is Luke's brother. He was a pastor at Crete, on the island of Crete. Paul, I don't know if you know this, Paul was imprisoned once and then released, and then he was imprisoned a second time. So after his second release, he went to Spain. That was his, I don't know if you remember that from the book of Acts, he always wanted to go to Spain. Paul wanted to go to Spain. He eventually gets to do this according to church tradition. But then he comes back and he takes Titus to Crete and they begin a work there. And so this letter is all about continuing the work there in Crete. This, at at this point, the book of Acts is finished. We don't have any more history according to Luke. Okay, so what I will be sharing with you from here on is from church history. Okay, so Paul's first imprisonment ends, and we find that in 2 Timothy 2 or 4, 16 through 17. And we find that he went to Spain. He writes his personal letters. During this time, when Paul is in Spain, he commissions Timothy to ask apostolic representation in Ephesus and in Asia Minor. Paul goes to Macedonia. He stays there. He writes some more letters there. And then afterwards, he is imprisoned a second time. Okay, gotta move on. All right. So AD 66, we have a Jewish revolt. The Zealots have finally gained enough influence with the people, and they start to revolt. And the thing that's significant about this is that what happens is Eleazar is the high priest operating in Jerusalem, and he refuses to offer any more sacrifices to the emperor. They offered sacrifices for the emperor's health, his well-being, his fortune, all those kinds of things. And this high priest said no more. And what it did was it just stirred the people and stirred the people and stirred the people and created unrest, a lot of unrest. So the early church then, with James's death, the early church is having to work through what's going on here, and they're struggling. And right here is where we see kind of our break between Judaism and Christianity. And according to Eusebius, who is our church historian, he records that the Jewish Christian believers, they wouldn't support all this political unrest that was going on. They didn't want to have anything to do with it. And they were told, I don't know if it's in your notes or not, but tradition says that the church in Jerusalem received a vision or an oracle by revelation that they were to leave the city of Jerusalem and that they were to go to Pella. They were to move their whole organization, and they say that whoever was worthy enough to receive it, so that meant that those who received it as being true, then they moved out of Jerusalem into the hill country of Pella, which was a good thing. Nero was in power at this point. He sends General Vespasian to crush the rebellion, and he comes in with 60,000 troops and sweeps down through northern Palestine, and he kills whoever is a part of the zealot resistance. Those who surrender, then the zealots come in behind them, and they execute the ones who surrender to the Romans. So it becomes just a total bloodbath, and this takes years for this to culminate. And then what we have is, because James is no longer the bishop or the leading pastor at Jerusalem, then Simeon becomes the bishop there, and he actually is a cousin of Jesus. It's still in the family, still keeping it in the family, and he is. He would be a first cousin of Jesus. His father was Joseph's brother. So, if that helps you at all. AD 67, Paul writes his second letter to Timothy, also in prison. You already have your notes there. I'm trying to see how much information I want to give you here. Peter writes his second letter to Rome. He's writing to the same believers. Peter's second letter was really questionable in adding it to the canon of the New Testament. And the reason why that was because Peter didn't have Silas to write his letter. So it looked different than the first letter. And they're thinking that he probably wrote it himself. And like I said before, his Greek wasn't so good. And so it caused a little bit of turmoil there in determining whether or not his second letter would be included in the canon. I'm missing one. Did I go too far? There we go. AD 68, again, the book of Hebrews was written. Your information at the top is incorrect as of today. I did some more reading, and it is almost certain that Luke did not pen this book for Paul. The book of Hebrews was written from the Septuagint. Paul would have never used the Septuagint to write any information about Jewish heritage, and this would have been a book strictly written to Jewish people, and so he would not have used it that way. It also shows that someone was very fluent in their, it was written in an Egyptian style, an Alexandrian style. So what we come down to is there are three different theories about who wrote this book. And it was either Paul who wrote it, penned by Luke, or it was possibly Priscilla who wrote it. Isn't that an interesting thought? Priscilla and Aquila. Priscilla wrote it. Or the most logical is that Apollos wrote it because he came from Alexandria. So interesting little tidbit there. And then you have the rest of the notes about the book of Hebrews. Okay. Nero's great fire, actual date, June 8th, 68. He sets Rome on fire and causes just terrible mayhem, blames it on the Christian people. And he is one crazy man. You know, you look at that picture and you know, he's crazy because he's only got stuff going this far. You know, who does that? Who does that? I don't know. All right, in 68, it's funny. See, do you get it? Yeah?
No, they said it looks like
Dale. Oh, isn't that precious? He's actually got kind of a mullet, too. See all the hair going on in the back?
I don't have that.
Close. Close. I can harass you. I can do that. Okay, Nero commits suicide in the midst of the Senate. That doesn't surprise me at all. And so then as Vespasian, he is still in Palestine. He's doing this warfare with the Jewish rebellion. They send him back. So he becomes the emperor, leaves his son Titus to do the work in Palestine. All right, I'm going to keep moving here. Okay, we have our flight to Pella. This flight to Pella marks a tremendous break between the synagogue and the church. The other thing is the church is becoming more Gentile than Jewish, and the Pharisees, they're becoming very uncomfortable with this. They don't feel they have the hold that they would have liked to have had on the Christian church. It was still considered a sister to Judaism. It was considered a sect, but the breach is growing and growing and growing, and it's out of this lack of nationalism and patriotism to the cause. AD 70 to 80, the book of Jude is written. Jude is the brother of James, half-brother of Jesus. And this is a brief but hard-hitting letter. He is just really telling them to contend for the faith. You got to contend for the faith. And the thing of it was that there were false teachers coming in. You can read it there. False teachers who were blatantly teaching that salvation by grace allowed them to sin without condemnation. So you can go ahead and sin. It gives license to grace is what it does. All right. And he is right on them all the time. He urgently warns them to contend for the faith that was once entrusted to the saints. AD 70, the battle finally reaches Jerusalem. Jerusalem is destroyed. The temple is destroyed. It is a nasty, nasty thing. Titus comes in. He surrounds the city. Nobody gets in. Nobody gets out. Cuts off the food. Cuts off the water. The people are starving. They're dying in the city. You try and exit the city, and you're executed or crucified and then hung on the wall. It was just a terrible, terrible time. So for the church in Jerusalem to leave Jerusalem was the best thing that they could do at that time. You can, if you're interested, it's quite a graphic, a horrifying story, but you can pick it up in the historian Josephus. He goes through the whole thing of the atrocities that happen in there. All right. I didn't give you these notes. There they are. Roman invasion comes to a standstill. Jerusalem is sacked, the temple is destroyed. And it now becomes the Pharisees' job to reconstruct Judaism. So we have a totally different look on Judaism. We don't have a temple anymore. So we don't need the Levites. We don't need the ministry. We don't need the sacrifices. So they basically redo Judaism. And we'll talk about that another time. AD 78, we have Masada. All the zealots that were left, they ran to Masada. Masada was a palace that Herod had made, and they run to this high mountain. It's near the Dead Sea, and they hold out there for 3 years. And the Romans eventually build ramps to get up there, and by the time they get up there, the 967 Jewish zealots that are there have committed suicide. So it's done. It's done. All right. Let me see here. I don't want to go into all of that because we're right at the time where we should end. So I'll leave you with that, 79. Well, it's quite long. It's quite long. It's quite long. I'll tell you another time, okay? So 79, Mount Vesuvius erupts and 2,000 people are killed. Isn't that a neat picture? Huh? Pompeii. It's in Italy. It's time frame. Yeah, this happens all, you know, it's just bing, bing, bing. It happens. Yep. Yep. 81, Titus dies, Domitian, he comes into power as the emperor. John writes his gospel. Roger will speak next week about why John wrote his gospel, but briefly there was issues about the deity of Jesus. And so the leaders in Asia Minor, the presbytery in Asia Minor, they're saying, you've got to write. He's the only one left of the eyewitnesses, of the disciples, of the 12. He's the only one that's left. And so they're requesting that he write this document. And you'll find that John's gospel is a spiritual gospel because they had to deal with spiritual things. We're no longer a simple church. We're dealing with heresies and all different kinds of things. So they have to bring it together and be able to explain some of the spiritual aspects to the person of Jesus. 95, John is on the island of Patmos. He is a criminal, treated as a criminal under Domitian, the emperor. And that's where he received his revelation. John dictates his revelation of Jesus Christ to his disciple Procurius. And Domitian is assassinated. Good thing. And we have a new Roman emperor who apologizes for all the idiocy of Domitian, and so then John is released. AD 97, Timothy, who is the bishop and pastor at Ephesus, he is killed. He tries to stop a parade for the goddess Artemis, and in the process, the people get really upset, and they drag him through town, and then after that, they stone him, and that is his demise at that point. All right, his relics were also taken to Constantinople, just for information's sake. We have a new emperor at this point in time. Trajan is the new emperor, and then AD 100, John the Apostle dies in Ephesus, and this is a modern-day picture. You can actually go to this site where that is his tomb. Okay? So the apostles are now finished. Hoo-hoo. Very good. Oh, yeah, I'll pray, and then you can be released. Father, I know this is a lot of information, a lot of history, but Father, history helps us know where we've come from, and it helps us to have courage and strength and joy in the midst of what we're going through now and what we will go through in the future. Father, it encourages us to see that these people gave their lives for this gospel, this true gospel. Father, help us with that. Jesus, enable us. Holy Spirit, speak to us in all the dealings of our lives that we have here present day. In Jesus' name, amen.